TV.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I really feel the need to almost apologize for Friday's show, putting you through that. Part of me tells me I should have done it. Part of me tells me I should not have done it. But of course, knowing the sovereignty of God, I had to do it. Because a truth hit me that day, and I'm going to elaborate on it in a better frame of mind, and I hope you understand it, because I've had to think about it myself. But first, to explain to give you a little bit of the backstory, it's just that I've been through so many really down times since, you know, the cancer diagnosis a year ago, and now the seriousness of it, the stage four nature of it, and the needing of the surgery, and it's not curtains, you know, for sure. There's a good chance that immunotherapy is gonna work, and there's a doctor in the University of Miami who's a genius who can put people's heads back on after car accidents. So this guy is gonna do my surgery. So anyway, you know, thinking a lot about my dad dying and watching him go through it, and not realizing at the time what it was, seeing it, being sympathetic, but unable to be empathetic, because empathetic requires you having gone through the same thing. Now, I've never gone through it like this. I've never understood what people went through when they've been without energy, without strength, feeling that death is near their door, and that their every waking moment is some form of pain and misery. So I've never been through that before, so I really thought a lot about my dad. And then it makes you sit down and watch sad videos about D-Day, videos about war and things people have gone through. And I was just thinking today, you know, as bad as I have it, I don't have people coming after me, hitting me in the face, putting me in prison like Jesus had. And so, you know, it's all relative, but I was having a bad day that day, really down. And I think it required me to get down that low in order to realize that it's such an obvious thing that you just don't realize it until it's forced on you in the depths of the valley of the shadow of death. And that is that the crucifixion is what made this the current wicked eon. No other eon is called a wicked eon, even though they are in relative states of wickedness. We know that only eons 4 and 5 are the eons in which God gets glory. These other eons are wicked, but this is a particularly wicked one, and you realize that the cross changed everything. The crucifixion changed everything. It was the centerpiece of not only eon 3, but the aeonian times. It's the centerpiece around which the eons revolve. It's in the center. If you look at a chart of the eons, the cross is the centerpiece. 5 eons, we're in the middle of eon 3. The eons began to consummate, according to Hebrews 9. The eons began to consummate at the coming of Christ. So that was the midpoint. So you see how the eons fan out on either side. You have 1, 2, and half of 3 on one side of the crucifixion, and you have half of 3, 4, and 5 on the other side. So that day, I was in a pit of misery, just absolute depression, just weeping, crying, just wanting to die. I just really, 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 really bad depression. And I thought, well, I don't care what the doctors say. I got to have a drink. I have to get out of this. Whatever I'm in is really horrible. I have to get out of it. I have to get out of it. I'm not allowed to do this. I'm not allowed to do that. I'm not allowed to do this. I'm not allowed to do this. Well, screw it. I had a little drink, one drink, kind of like this. And I saw enough light. I saw a sliver of light. I said, okay, I just got a truth. And I want to share it. And I saw a sliver of opportunity, a window open with the alcohol, a window. I said, if I don't make a show now, I'm never going to make it. I'm not even going to look in a mirror. I'm not going to check myself like I you know, there's some vanity there. You don't want to look like absolute shit when you make a show for people. You want to respect your audience, and I wanted to respect you and the truth that I brought you, but I felt like it was so buried in my own personal misery that I cheated you a little bit out of the truth. And I want to make sure you get it now. So I look for windows now. I just look for windows of opportunity. God gives me windows of brief periods of feeling decent where I can, you know, actually convey a message and have it remembered and believed. I want to make sure you understand something about grace. Grace does not fix a wicked eon. And that is the lie of the Acts 28 position, that there was this miraculous line, Acts 28:28, when finally the grace of God came upon Paul and his ministry began in earnest, and now a new era dawns, and it turned this eon from a wicked one into a good one. That is an absolute lie. This lie that Acts 28, when Paul says, well, he'd already gone to the nations. He just said it again. We go to the nations. He said it again. It was the third time Israel rejected Christ. It's that whole episode of the court hearing in Rome was to be a testimony against Israel at the Great White Throne. That's the whole purpose of it. There was testimony after testimony against Israel. And finally, they had their one of their best friends, although they didn't know it, in Paul. And he gave them the truth, and he testified to them over and over and over again, and they rejected him too. So they're on record as rejecting the prophets, rejecting Christ, the Messiah himself, rejecting his 12 disciples, and then rejecting the smartest guy that ever lived in the ways of God, and that is the Apostle Paul. Four rejections. And they will have no excuses when they stand before God at the Great White Throne. They'll have no excuses. That was for them. And now I tell you this. And that is, the wicked eon and the grace that would keep people steady within the wicked eon happened at the same time, like lightning and thunder at the same time. And it's funny I should be talking about lightning and thunder, because there's a storm happening right now in Fort Lauderdale. Lightning and thunder. Pretty heavy. Which I like. When our Lord died on the cross, that's how evil this eon is. We are standing on the same earth that holds this blood of Christ. We're on the blood-soaked planet that killed Jesus Christ. That's what this eon thinks of your Savior, including Christianity. They are enemies of the cross. They have destroyed the work of the cross by turning it into an opportunity for them to save themselves. Jesus just gave them a chance. They pat him on the head, thank him for making the effort, for opening the gates of heaven, and now they force themselves in by acts of will. So even they do not understand what happened at the crucifixion. The Acts 28 people do not understand what happened at the crucifixion. There could not have been a gap of longer than 3 seconds between the death of Christ and the opening of the heart of God to the world. There could not have been a gap of 2 seconds between the death of Christ and the opening of the heart of God toward the world. There could not have been a millisecond. But at the death of Christ, the temple veil was rent in two. The temple veil that separated God from the rest of the nations. The temple veil that really established God's relationship with only one nation, Israel. That was over because Israel had just crucified their own Messiah. And these Acts 28 hide-and-go-seekers, blind leading the blind, are looking for the magical line when grace came. And it was at the cross. It was a simultaneous event. It was like lightning and thunder, the death of Christ and the rending of the temple veil supernaturally from top to bottom. from God's viewpoint to the people of the earth who are now going to suffer upon what had been established as the wicked eon. And as I say, nothing has changed the wicked eon. Clyde Pilkington and all the Acts 28 people think that 30, 40 years passed, and then miraculously Paul's ministry started when he was in jail, and this magic line happened, and everything Paul wrote before that was no good, doesn't belong to you, ancient history, and now everything from that point forward now is a new era, and now Paul is writing magical words that apply to you. The other words he wrote in 1 Corinthians, 1 Thessalonians, that belongs to the age before grace came, because these people are so blind that not only do they, well, they do see the crucifixion of Christ, the Pilkington group. I will say that, but they don't see it for what it was, truly. They see it for its salvation aspects, but they don't see it for the eon cursing aspects of it. And they certainly do not consider the rending of the temple veil as the moment when God was conciliated to the world. Conciliated to the world. Sure, it still had to be walked out. Yes, it still had to be given to a messenger. And that didn't happen right away. Saul had to be called on the road to Damascus. It didn't happen right away. His evil had to be brought to fruition. But it was lightning and thunder. And the grace did not change the eon, because it came at the same time as a demonstration, as the crux, as the definitive moment that would define the wicked eon, and that is the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, and nothing has changed since that would undo a wicked eon into a good eon. They think that now we're living in an era that we should be building houses and living as though we belong here, and living as though buying things and retaining them. That's their doctrine. That's their doctrine. Their doctrine, everybody should marry. That's Clyde Pilkington doctrine. Marry and have children. Hold on, and this is in the same context of 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 29. Hold on to your possessions. That goes right along. Hold on to your possessions. Rejoice like the world rejoices, like there's no tomorrow. Be sorrowful like the world is sorrowful. It's all in the same group. You can't separate. Let those having wives be as though not having them. You can't separate that from use the world but don't use it up, or buy but don't retain. You cannot separate. It's none of these items are sold separately. So if you're gonna say that now that a new era has come. Well, that past era, or that terrible crucifixion era, when God hadn't opened up his true grace yet. What do you mean he hadn't opened up his true grace yet? Temple veil rent, and God was conciliated to the world at the death of Christ. What else was he waiting for? Christ had given his life for the world, not just for the world, but the universe. And it was at that time he was conciliated by his death. We were justified by his death and conciliated by his death, though he conciliated the world to himself by his death. 2 Corinthians 5, read it a million times. Then what is the purpose of grace? If grace does not fix a wicked eon, if grace does not change the era from an era of holy crap, we're living in a cauldron of shit, to an era of hey, live it up, get married. That's what they said in the days of Noah. I'm not saying you shouldn't get married. I'm just saying don't make it a thing. Don't make it like the thing that's going to make you happy. I mean, isn't it funny that the Lord said, as in the days of Noah, they were marrying and giving in marriage. There's nothing wrong with marrying and giving in marriage. I'm a happily married man. And Paul says, don't clutch your spouse like they are the blood of your life and the existence. It's spirit that's the quote, unquote, blood of our existence. And God graciously gives us our spouses, our children. But he loans them to us. They're not ours. But this gang is teaching that they're yours. Hang on to them. Hang on to life. Hang on to everything. Hold on tight. Live it. Live it up now because it's a new era. Now we have grace. Boy, it took a long time. It took 30 years. But when Luke wrote Acts 28:28, it makes no sense at all. Everything changed. No, ladies and gentlemen. Grace, the purpose of grace is for those now in this eon, stuck in this eon. It is to see and realize the reality of this eon and how to deal with it. That's one. Grace allows us to survive this eon. Grace allows us to live, be in it, but not of it. It does not change the nature of the eon. It does nothing to change the nature of the eon. In Galatians 1:4, after Paul's ministry is well underway, he calls this a wicked eon. Galatians 1:4. He called it that, and it still is that. Nothing changed that. But something changed you. What? You realized the grace of God in truth. You realized it. You realized reconciliation. It happened when the temple veil was rent, when Jesus Christ died for the sins of the world and the temple veil was rent, and the world was conciliated. God conciliated the world to himself through Christ. How many times have I read it? How many times have you read it? And now we come to a realization of that truth. Our realization doesn't make that true. Grace allows us to see it. What does Paul pray for in Ephesians? For more grace to come to you. More grace, more grace. I pray that you get the grace. What for, Paul? What for? So I can have more kids, so I can get a new car, so I can get a better job, so I can run around like happy Jesus. No, for you to realize the height, the depth of your calling, for you to understand the nature of this eon, for you to understand the nature of the crucifixion, for you to understand that you're in the world but not of the world, for you to understand that it's a wicked eon, for you to understand that we are to long to escape into the loving arms of Christ. That's what grace has done for individual people to whom God gives a realization of that grace. And to acquaint us with our role. Grace not only helps us understand the eon, but our place in it. And God calls us and lets us know that he has adopted us as sons and made us part of a plan of redemption. We complete Christ who completes the all in all. We're the completion of the one who completes the all in all. Ephesians 1:23. What a horrible deception that after the death of Christ, when God says that through his son he's conciliated the world to himself, Clyde and Charles Welch, the inventor of the Acts 28 position, they're still looking for the event. They're still looking for the line when grace arrived. And then when they think they find it, they misinterpret it completely. They twist it. Instead of making it a means of realizing what God is doing, they make it a means of switching the era, changing the era, changing the eon from one of wickedness to one of purity and goodness, to one of opportunity, to one of patriarchy, to one of leaping upon the hills. It's a lie. I thank God for the grace that has allowed us, caused us, not allowed us, caused us to see through this lie. That Paul's ministry didn't begin until he was in jail, a few months from death, and that the era changed, and that the world was redeemed. Look around you, the world is not redeemed. We're of the very few who understand that God is at peace with a lot of us, the whole world, justified, the whole world. But to very few, he gives a realization of it. If you want to talk about a door being open, if you want to talk about a gate being open, you look at the rending of the temple veil, that's where you find it. But it wasn't an opportunity. It was God doing something. That was God doing it. It was a physical man. Jesus. it was a physical manifestation of a reality that something had changed. Something had changed with what? That was just a sign that something had changed. The change was the death of Christ on the cross, which is why Paul says, I come among you, deciding to know nothing except Jesus Christ and Him crucified.